Good morning and welcome to another Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation's Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. I am your host, Michael Kernodle, and of course, this is not a visitor to the room. He's with us frequently. There's none other than today's educator, Dr. Brandon Robertson. And today's topic is what I love about Reggie Workman. I know you're excited. We are ready for this one. And I just want to remind everyone that's joining us live. First of all, thank you for your time and just coming in to hear what we have to share. And hopefully you are out there sharing what we are presenting today. Tell your friends, tell your other musician buddies, come on, join in with us. And if you have any questions, you can go into that chat feature and just type your questions there. And we'll have some time at the end to answer anything. You know, this wouldn't be possible without our great sponsors. So we want to remind you to please be sure to check out the studio archive of past video sessions at clearwaterjazz.com's education outreach section. That's brought to you by Blue Water Wealth Management at Stewart Partners and Duke Energy, as well as our Young Lion podcast available wherever you stream. And that's brought to you by our friends over there at Marine Max Clearwater. Just search Young Lions Jazz Massive Virtual Sessions. What can I say about the doctor here? He's given us so many great sessions. You can always go back and check him out for free. I'm going to stress that for free because in our archives, you can always check that out. How about Raise the Bar, preparation for a performance, something we all need. Create a new music composition and charts. Knowing your worth, negotiating the gig, and so many of the What I Love About series like he's going to do today. And if you don't know him, Brandon Robertson is an Emmy-nominated music director, professional upright electric bassist, composer, and music educator, originally from none other than Tampa, Florida.
Yes, sir!
He completed his Bachelor's of Arts from Florida State University in 2009 and his master's in music and jazz studies in spring of 2016. Currently, you may catch him down there at the FGCU campus where he's a basketball band director, and also he's the jazz studies director. So many great things happening at Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers under his tutelage. And we are ready for him to go ahead and join in and go for it. So I'm going to stop talking because I know you can't wait to hear from this awesome educator today. So Brandon Robertson, the stage is all yours.
And it's a big stage to fill, so I'll do my best. Thank you, Michael. Thank you so much. And thank you to the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation for having me back. I always love doing these series. And as before, you can go to the archive section in the studio on the Clearwater Jazz Holiday website. Check out all the previous sessions that myself and the other wonderful bases in the community in the Tampa Bay area have done. And so I thank you this morning for having me. So today we get to talk about a legend. We get to talk about a man who is still with us today. And I'm very happy that he's still here. He's still around. He has contributed over 50 years, y'all. 50. This man has a flushful career that exceeds all the way back to the late 50s, and his contribution to jazz, his contribution to the double bass, his contribution to music itself should not be overshadowed. And I'm speaking about the wonderful man from Philadelphia himself, Mr. Reggie Workman. Now, I've done a few of these What I Love About series. I've covered Christian McBride, Sam Jones, Ray Brown, Jaco Pastorius. I've covered them all. But this gentleman right here is somebody who I feel deserves his flowers. And because he is still here, I would love to give him his flowers and just praise him on not only being a great influence for myself, but have taught and worked with many of our founding generation, current jazz musicians who are on the scene right now doing their thing, and has been influenced by this man. So let's go ahead and get right into it. Oh, let me go here. There we go. So Mr. Reginald Reggie Workman, born June 26, 1937 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He is recognized as one of the most technically gifted American avant-garde jazz bassists and hard bop double bassists in history. Now, let me stop right there before I continue on his accolades. Anybody that knows the Philadelphia scene has produced some of the best bass players that's come throughout jazz history. Percy Heath, Christian McBride. I mean, there's a slew of musicians who have come out of Philly. I mean, this is an area where jazz was thriving, jazz was hard, and jazz was prominent. And during his time in the 60s, the way that Reggie Workman approached the bass was very unique. If you hear some of these classic records that I'm about to present to you later on through this session, you'll understand why he was transcribed. He was the most listened to bassist of this time because he just had such an open, gifted logic of music. You know, when he was a young boy, he realized that music at an early age, that music was very important to him. And he has a deeply rooted spiritual connection with music that has led him to play a certain way that has not only influenced a new generation of bassists, but just musicians in general. Okay. He is a teacher. He was one of the founding members of the black jazz culture up in New York City. I mean, this man has contributed jazz education since the 70s, and he's still to this day educating young folks and still giving back. He is a wonderful composer, a jazz advocate whose styles ranges from bop to bebop to avant-garde and way beyond his time. He's recorded extensively through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. You'll find a large bulk of his catalog in those three decades. Recorded 19 albums as a leader and a co-leader. He led a super group called the Super Jazz Trio that featured pianist Tommy Flanagan and drummer Joe Chambers. And him and Joe Chambers worked extensively through the mid 60s all the way up to the 80s. I mean, they were really close, tight knit. And when you have a bassist and drummer who are like this, man, it's like peanut butter and jelly. You know, you can't have Kool-Aid without sugar. You know, they just go together, you know. And so he's recorded and toured with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, Thelonious Monk, Max Roach, Freddie Hubbard, Lee Morgan, Eric Dolphy, Gigi Grice, who's a killing saxophonist, by the way, Booker Little, Roy Haynes, my man Wayne Shorter, pianist Red Garland, James Moody, singer Abby Lincoln, Alice Coltrane, Jerry Allen, whoo, Horace Silver, Benny Golson, Cedar Walton, Elvin Jones, McCoy Turner. I mean, should I keep going, folks? Yes, I'm going to keep going. Curtis Filler, Yusef Lateef, what? Pharoah Saunders, come on, man. Clifford Jordan and Bobby Hutcherson. I mean, there's more. There's a whole lot more who he's worked with. But just so you all understand the catalog, I mean, every last one of these folks I've named have not only made huge contributions to jazz, but they are staples within our jazz lineage in our history, and he has been part of that history. He formed the Super Jazz Trio with Tommy Flanagan and drummer Joe Chambers in the 70s, and they recorded extensively as a group, played many standards, original compositions by members of the group itself. And then 2 years ago, he became a National Endowment of Artists Jazz Master in 2020. Now, that is the highest honor that you can ever receive as a jazz musician. I mean, literally, that's the highest you can go. And for him to get that prestige honor, I believe in the same year, Bobby McFerrin had also received that same award. And so, like I said, when someone deserves their flowers, it's very meant. We need to give our elders their flowers, and he definitely deserves this. So, he's one of the most leading bases of open improvisation in jazz history. And today, what I want to do is play some of the records. Not necessarily some of the solos, but also just the way he approached the bass. I mean, this man literally had a free spirit. He had a free spirit here of how he approached the bass. Like I said before, he had a deep rooted spiritual connection. He has a deeply rooted spiritual connection with the music, and he always put the music first. The music was always first. And like I tell my students, you take care of the music will take care of you. Give me 1 second here, guys. And I'm having a technical difficulty right now. Give me 1 second. Okay, we're all good. Sorry. My computer unplugged and it was about to die, so I had to plug it in. Sorry about that. We're gonna continue on here. So here are the things that I love about Reggie Workman. First of all, he's one of my favorite bassists that has a beautiful sound. I mean, every time I've heard him play, every note that he plays, he means it, and you can feel it. And sometimes when you listen to a bass player, it's very hard to engage, you know, their feel, because some people just do a lot of, they do all this, what I call the nonsense, the doodling and the sippity gongs, okay? And if you're gonna play a sippity gong, you gotta feel, it has to have a certain feel behind it. And every time I've ever heard Reggie Workman play bass, that feel is present. Like, you can, it's right off the bat, you know he meant what he played. His musicality on the double bass is something that I really appreciate, because he takes it serious. You know, when you treat the music with respect, when you treat the music with elegance, when you treat the music with passion and what it deserves, it gives you another sense of humanity that you tap into. And this was something that he strived every single time he recorded and performed. Even to this day, you know, I was watching this interview that he did back in 2015, and he always spoke about how, I always make sure that when I'm on the bandstand, I never make it about me. I never try to do something that'll take away from the music. And so having that kinship in his mind, having that type of relationship with the music, makes his musicality even more greater. He had a huge contribution to the avant-garde movement and beyond that time period. Now, he did record with John Coltrane, and one of my favorite John Coltrane records, aside from A Love Supreme, was Impressions. And Reggie Workman, the way he played bass on that record, you could tell that the bassists that performed with Coltrane in the 60s, right before he passed away, they had a sense of urgency of really pushing the music forward. And so his contribution to the avant-garde era really enhanced that. I mean, you had other bassists like Charlie Hayden, who I also did a Love About series on. Jimmy Garrison, who was another bassist that performed regularly with John Coltrane. These guys had understanding of how to play freely and really be voracious with how they approached the music. There was no lies in their playing. It was all felt here. It was coming from a truthful place. He had extensive musical influences throughout each decade after the 60s. If you listen to early bass players, you know, Peter Washington, you listen to early Christian McBride, you know, you listen to early Charnette Moffett. I mean, these guys all have that same sound that basses and like Reggie Workman was contributing to this scene. And each decade you kept hearing them get much more freer and freer. And I'm not talking about playing a whole bunch of out stuff. I'm talking about his spirit, that he felt free in the music. So anything that he played, it was relatable. It always had a stance each decade, man, even up until this point. And that's something that I strive for. I know that's something that many bass players in our decade now strive for, and this was something that he was very good at. He always pushed the envelope in his solos and bass lines. One of the greatest attributes I think that Reggie Workman was able to produce was his time with Art Blakey. See, Art Blakey, when you went to the school of Art Blakey, and if you graduated with a degree out of that institution, you came out a whole different musician. And every single bass player that had the opportunity to perform, Jimmy Merritt, Reggie Workman, Doug Watkins, I mean, Peter Washington, the list goes on and on. Man, they all took away something from working with Art Blakey. And when you listen to those classic innovative records from the 60s, you know, between 61 and 65 with the Jazz Messengers, I mean, literally most cats my age will always regurgitate back to that time period, because the way the music sounded, it was being pushed. I mean, he didn't have to do a whole lot of crazy stuff, but you, like I said, the what he played, it fit, and it just enhanced the music. He elevated the music to a higher stance. He had very innovative concepts in his approach performing with the Jazz Messengers. So records like Indestructible, records like Ugetsu, records like Caravan, I mean, these are some of these monumental, or Free For All, which is probably one of my top three all-time favorite Art Blakey records, hands down, aside from Mosaic. Mosaic is another classic one too. But Free For All, I mean, bruh, if you've never listened to that record, yeah, I'm gonna need for y'all to stop this video right now. Go ahead on YouTube, and you're welcome. You'll thank me later. But he had such an innovative concept. Blakey would always push the envelope just enough to let his musicians come in and take care of the rest. All he had to do was just sit at the drums and lay it down. And when you got a bass player that could do the exact same approach as he was doing on the drums, it makes life easier for all the other musicians to play at a high level. He definitely had a big bounce in his bass playing. I say that a lot about my favorite bass players. And what I mean by the big bounce, we call it the hump. Like, you can, it's almost like you can feel the wood, you can feel the string hitting the wood a certain way on the fingerboard, that it had a punch to it, like a, and you just can't help but it's just a little bounce every time you hear that. I mean, and that's a lot of the bass players that played in, excuse me, in the 60s had this approach, you know. Definitely, not going on a sidetrack here, but Mingus was a bass player that I always credited, that I studied, who had that same bounce in his playing. Like, you just, it was almost like he's really shoving the bass all the way in your face. And Reggie Workman was one of those bass players who did that too. You know, he doesn't get a lot of credit for that, but for me, from my personal journey through jazz and learning jazz music, he was always a bass player I referenced to, especially when I was in college. And my professor, when he first introduced me to Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, he says, I want you to go listen to these three records, Indestructible, Ugetsu, and Free Fall. Reggie Workman's the bass player. And I don't want you to transcribe him. No. I don't want you to transcribe nothing he's playing. I just want you to listen to his feel. Listen to how he's approaching each of these songs with Blakey. It took me, y'all, a couple of years to figure out what my professor was trying to get at, you know, what he was trying to tell me. And I didn't understand it until I was actually out playing professionally. When you get on a bandstand and you start to realize, like, man, this is why that music was so powerful, because he's expressing himself in a manner that, like, it's selfless. It's about the music. So I teach my students that currently, if you take care of the music will also take care of you. And he always had that in the back of his mind. The way that he connected with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, I think really set him up to be such a prolific musician. You know, Blakey, Blakey had came from a hard time, you know, starting off in the 40s and then moving his way up to where he was actually becoming a leader in his own right. And when you have somebody who is teaching you how to live as a musician during the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, I mean, we all know what was going on historically. So he's teaching you how to do things. So everybody who was part of that ensemble learned how to become a band leader, learned how to become a businessman, learned how to write music, learned how to arrange music, learned how to negotiate, learned how to play in very high straining situations and play at such a high level that you don't expect anything less than that. And so when he went off to lead his own group, it was almost as though he was still playing with Blakey. You can hear the connection when once he left and went off to do his own thing. It never went down. It never stopped. And that's so influential to me. I know it's been influential to a lot of musicians that he's worked with over time. I mean, he's taught guys like Brad Meldow, Jace Mraz, Robert Glasper. I mean, a lot of cats have come under his tutelage and like have really, really, you know, taken away the deep kinship that he has for this music. And then my last point that I love about Reggie Workman is his deep spiritual connection to the music. Like I stated before, you know, when he was a kid, he realized at a very early age that music had a deeper meaning to his life. And so he never wanted to take that for granted. Every single time he plays, he always takes it with grace, and elegance. And he always wants to make sure that the music has a feeling, the music has a purpose. If you never play music with a purpose, you just playing a bunch of notes. You just doing something just to do it. And every time he plays the bass, it's with a purpose. He has an actual meaning behind what he's doing. That's why I stated earlier, when he pushed the envelope in his solos and his bass lines, like I can feel all of his approach. I can feel his concepts. It's like it's almost like you're talking to me through another channel. You know, something that's an outer body experience. And sometimes musicians can do that. They can bring something out of you that you yourself don't even realize you possess. And so as a bass player, and when I was coming up trying to learn this music, I needed to hear bass players that had that kind of influence in the music. You know, Reggie Workman is definitely in my top five favorite bass players, only because he just had a very solid ground. He was very solid with who he was and what kind of musician he wanted to become. So, again, going down to reiterate again, he has a beautiful, rich sound. His musicality on the double bass, it was superb. He had a huge contribution to the avant-garde movement. Extensive musical influences throughout each decade after the 60s. Definitely pushed the envelope in his solos and his bass line. Had a super innovative concept in his approach while performing with the Jazz Messengers, which make those records super classic. He had a big bounce in his bass playing. He also had such a deep connection with Art Blakey and those musicians that even beyond when those guys disbanded and went off to do their own thing, they all still had the same attributes in their own groups. And then, of course, last but not least, you got to have a spiritual connection with this music. Like I said, you cannot play music without a purpose. You always need a purpose in life, especially when you're doing music, because music is supposed to help people, supposed to heal people, supposed to bring people together. And when you have that kind of mindset, what we like to call hot, which I gained this concept from a pastor from North Carolina, Mr. Oklahoma, Mr. Michael Todd, humble, open and transparent. And I feel like Reggie Workman has possessed all three of those things in his music. He was humbled in the music because he never was being selfish with how he approached it. He was very open to accepting the things that were being brought into him and what he was hearing on stage, and very transparent of how he presented it to the world. And I appreciate that about him. And like I said, while he's still here with us, I will make sure to give him his flowers, and I will make sure that he knows that we all in the jazz community love him and we respect him deeply. So here's some of my favorite Reggie Workman features on albums. Now, the Super Jazz Trio, I got introduced to this record, I want to say it was recent. It wasn't something that I checked out, you know, earlier in my journey in jazz. I would say in the last 6 years, I came across this record. Like I said, I watched this interview that he did back in 2015, and then he was talking about this group, the Super Jazz Trio. And I'm like, Super Jazz Trio, I never heard of them. So I, you know, like most people do these days, because we got internet, I googled it, Google search, Super Jazz Trio, who's that? And then I was like, oh wait, this is a group he led, well, co-led with pianist Tommy Flanagan, who also played with Coltrane, and Joe Chambers, who worked extensively with a lot of musicians from the 60s, but specifically he did a lot of work with Wayne Shorter and Herbie Hancock. These guys recorded, I believe, and don't quote me off the top of my head, but if I can remember, I want to say about 8 or 9 records together. And they recorded pretty much throughout the 70s and early 80s. But the two records that I love, that I actually listened to and I checked out, was the Super Jazz Trio. That was their first record that they did together. And then they did a record called The Standard with a bunch of different standards on there in 1980. Now, as you can see, the next four records, I mean, I got to talk about them, but if you know, you know. And I'm talking about those world classic Art Blakey and the Jazz Messenger records. Now, Blakey had a few different, what I like to call, classes. You know, you had a different few. You know, when you go to high school, you got freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors, right? So I feel like Art Blakey had classes within his group, coming out of the early to mid 50s when it was hard bop was popping, all the way into the avant-garde era where the music was still popping bop wise, but it was a lot more freer in how they approached it. The rhythms, the articulations, the melodies, everything was just heightened, just fire, fuego, right? And Caravan is a record that was the first, actually was one of the first Art Blakey records I checked out. Okay, now there was a few Live at Bohemian Caverns. I've checked that one now. Obviously Not in Tunisia, Mosaic. I mean, these are, you know, some other Art Blakey classics that featured different other bass players. You know, the bass players from that time period that was working with him was Detroit's own Doug Watkins, Philly's Jimmy Merritt, and then of course Reggie Workman. So he had a few bass players that he transitioned through, and also one of the original members of the rhythm section was Horace Silver, and then later on with Cedar Walton. And so you got these classic albums that came out in the 60s, and you get to probably in my top three of Blakey records that he was featured on. Free for All, I have learned, transcribed, and played every song off that record. And even to this day, which a really good friend of mine, shout out to Mr. Paul Gavin, he's a Tampa native up there. He leads an actual Art Blakey tribute band called Mosaic in that area. And he also has one down here in my area in Fort Myers. And he is someone who has been incredibly influenced by Art Blakey. But we have performed most of these records, and every time we get on stage and we play those records, I feel as though I was in 1963 playing this on stage with Art Blakey, because the energy is still there. If you listen to those, any of these four records, Caravan, Ugetsu, Free For All, Indestructible, if you listen to any of these four records, I promise you, I promise you, you will feel the same way most of the people did in that time period felt when that first came out. It still sounds relevant to this day, and we in 2022. Yeah, it's still popping. Okay, Impressions, like I stated earlier, he did do a lot of records. He did Live at the Newport. He did a record called Ballads with John Coltrane. He's featured on a few records with John Coltrane, but this particular record, I remember listening to this one and I was like, dang, whoever playing bass on it is snapping right now. And I found out it was Reggie Workman. I'm like, okay, all right. And these guys was not afraid to go there. I mean, legit not afraid to go there. I mean, they took it to all the heights that they could. And of course, one of my all, okay, so Wayne Shorter was a little different. He hit a little different. And shout out to Wayne too. He deserves his flowers as well. He's still with us. And I love the fact that he was able to do his suite that came out, I believe, a year and a half ago. He finally completed this suite that he wanted to present to the world. And I was very proud that I got to watch that video that got put out on YouTube. And it was a beautiful composition, beautiful, beautiful suite that he wrote. But Wayne Shorter was different, man. He hit a little different back in the day. And when he got with Art Blakey, bruh, I mean, from the first record he did with Blakey up until when he left and he started coming out with Night Dreamer, Juju, Adam's Apple, Schizophrenia. I mean, all of these classic records he came out in the 60s. You heard the sound changed. I mean, his whole playing just opened up tremendously. And this particular record, I felt like people slept on Adam's Apple, man. It came a little later after he left Blakey's group. But this is like right in the forefront, like the beginning stages when he started becoming a band leader by himself. And man, you want to talk about some tracks on there that hit, bruh. Joe Chambers, Reggie Workman, and Herbie as a rhythm section. What y'all say nowadays? The kids say it's slap. Yeah, that one was slapping super hard, for real, for real. And Wayne Shorter, who also had a big influence on Reggie because he worked with Reggie and the Messengers. Like I said, a lot of these guys still were performing together after they left that group. So that particular record, I remember listening to that record in college, and that's what really made me start liking Wayne Shorter, just because of the way that rhythm section played behind him. I'm like, man, and Chief Crazy Horse is probably one of my, is literally in my top five all-time favorite Wayne Shorter tunes. I mean, that just that bass figure at the very beginning, bro. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna learn this. This is, yeah, this one hitting. This one right here. Okay, so let me go back through it again. Super Jazz Trio, The Standard, Caravan, You Get To, Free For All, Indestructible, Impressions, and Adam's Apple will all be my favorite classic Reggie Workman features. And so if you get a chance to check out any of these records, I highly, highly recommend it. Okay. Now, some of these songs that I'm going to perform for you, or I should say play for you, not perform, but I have performed these tunes. Some of them are just the way he played the bass on these records. So the first two are going to be featured, you know, featuring him, you know, doing his thing soloistically. And he definitely had a very open approach in his solos. It wasn't strict like super bebop, but he had that free form within his playing that still made sense. I mean, at the time when I first listened to him, it didn't make sense because I was like, I'm still learning jazz, and I feel like everybody was playing the same until you start listening to jazz a little more and you can differentiate who sounds like what. And so for me, I actually the first two songs were from the Super Trio group, and you know, the Softly as the Morning Sunrise, it's a very classic standard. And then Pent Up House, you know, is another classic standard, Sonny Rollins. And, you know, just the way that he approached both of those songs soloistically was just like, bro, you snap. I don't even know what you was on this one, but you was feeling yourself that day. You was in it. You was all the way deep in them pockets, knee deep in the pocket. And so the first two are actually from his group that he would co-led. And then the last three are features that I just loved his bass playing on them records. Like Chief Crazy Horse. Like I said, you know, the very beginning of that record. It was just a feel like you like. Like you couldn't. The first time I heard that song, I remember blasting that song in my dorm. And my roommate was like, "My guy, I need you to relax. You need to relax." I was like, "What you mean? You don't know about Wayne Shorter? Man, you sleeping, bro. I need you to be all the way woke. Cause my man is coming in and you got a young Herbie. Young Herbie. I'm talking about off the road with Miles Herbie. Like he started discovering electric piano Rhodes Herbie. Like, oh damn, I can play like this? Okay, that's cool." So yes, this record, Chief Crazy Horse, is probably one of my favorite features on that record. Now, this next one, which I believe, don't quote me, I'm pretty sure Lee Morgan wrote this one, but Calling Miss Khadija. And you hear that blinking. I gotta laugh because I remember falling out my chair the first time I heard that song. And I heard Cedar coming in, doubling the bass line. And then I'm like, okay, this is cool. How the drums gonna come in? It's cause it got like a kind of like an Afro-Cuban, low Latin feel, and then you just hear a ting 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 ting. Just that classic Blakey. And you're like, oh my God. And then you hear the horns. Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine people who are listening to this song or watching them perform this song live. I couldn't imagine them standing in their seat. Like, I would have jumped up and been screaming, like, bro, what is it I'm listening to right now? This is fire. And then the core, the reason why I like this album, Free For All, is because I felt like between him, Cedar Walton, and Blakey, the three of them just understood each other musically. And you can hear that every song that they performed on that record, they just went for it. Like I feel like that's why he called it a free for all, because he was just like, man, bump it. I'm just going, hey, bro, we just going. Like, when you hear that melody line, what, bruh. I'm getting chills right now just trying to sing that melody, because I can, every time I hear that record, it just puts me in a happy space. Like, I get excited to play music, and that's what I said I loved about Reggie Workman's playing, because you could tell he was always excited when he played. Like, he loved the music. And so that's one of my favorite records. Now, I'm not talking about the album. I mean, I love the album too, but the record, that particular record, the core, what, yo, we're gonna get to that. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. So this first record is featured on the album The Standard. This was a record, again, that came out in the late 70s, and this was his trio that he formed together, featuring Tommy Flanagan on piano and Joe Chambers on drums. And so we're gonna just kind of listen to it a little bit, get a feel for it, and yeah, let's get right into it. Thank you. not afraid to go for it. That's why I told you, I love his bass playing, man. How he just goes for it, man. He just pushes it. You can tell he's pushing it. And I ain't talking about the tempo. I'm talking about musical. I gotta stop right there. I gotta stop right there. Because if I keep going, man, y'all might not know how to handle it. But let's continue. But you see how free his solos are. Like, you could tell, like, over time, he was just happy playing. Like, it ain't even matter. Like, I may not be right on the beat. I may not even be right in the key center. You know, on what chord it fall on. But guess what? You feel it, and that's all that matters. The jazz is a feel. You gotta feel the music. You can't just play it like, you know, robotically, man. You gotta feel that joint. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, let's keep going here. That was good call. All right, this next one, Pent-Up House, featured on the first album they came out with, Super Jazz Trio, with the same rhythm section, Mr. Reggie Workman on bass, Tommy Flanagan on piano, and Mr. Joe Chambers on drums. And this is a classic Sonny Rollins tune, and let's see how they approach this one. Let's dig. Talking about that bounce, yeah, y'all talking about, right? Y'all can hear that bounce I was referring to. Mm-hmm. That's right, people. I am making the bass stink face. Because that thing stinky. Y'all ain't even catch that one. Ooh. When I first heard this record, I'm telling y'all, when I first, because I had no idea about this record, and then when I discovered it, and then I heard that solo, I said, "Dang, he snapped! He ain't just snapped." I mean, like I said, man, the man was free for all. Okay, so yeah, that was a classic. That's from his co-led group, the Super Jazz Trio. Now let's get on to some real stuff, the stuff that he was getting into. Okay, this tune right here, we just gonna only listen to the beginning of it. The only reason I, because I'm when I first heard this record, my bass professor, shout out to Rodney Jordan, Florida State University. Rodney is a big Wayne Shorter fan too, and he has pretty much all Wayne Shorter's records. And I remember in his office, I saw this one. And I asked him about it in my lesson one day. I said, "Hey, Rodney, what record is this? I've never seen this record before." He's like, "Yeah, go ahead and borrow that." So he actually let me borrow. He's like, "Go ahead, listen to this." I came back the next week to my lesson, and I knew the bass line. I learned this bass line. So he's like, "Dang, you transcribed the record." I said, "Rodney, you ain't tell me how fire this record was." He said, "A lot of people sleep on this record, man." I'm like, "Man, this record is fire." And Joe Chambers snapped on this record. That's how I was introduced to Joe Chambers, because I had never heard of him before this record. You know, I knew this record before I knew the Super Jazz Trio. But the way Joe Chambers plays on this record, I was like, "Dang, this drummer is killing." And then just the relationship between the two of them, solid. So this is one of my favorite Wayne Shorter records. I mean, I just love the vibe that they put on this one. So check this one out. We ain't about to snap right now. We need to go for the hot. Fast forward a little bit. Y'all got to hear Herbie solo behind the rhythm section. Hold on. I know I'm fast forward here, guys. Sorry about that. Oh. Sorry about that. Oh no, sorry guys, my bad. I'm messing up over here. Hold on. Okay. I just want y'all to hear how the rhythm section hooked up behind Herbie's solo. Snapped on this. Bro, Joe Chambers, he snapped on this, man. Bruh, y'all can't tell me that. When I first heard this song and I heard that little polyrhythm he was doing over his song, Reggie Workman's doing boom, 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 like just constant drone, like double stop. I'm like, it took me years to figure out what they was doing. The first time I heard that, I could not feel the rhythm. I'm like, what rhythm are they playing right there? And it was just a 3/4 rhythm. After a while, I figured it out. But I was like, dang, that just the way they manipulated that. Yeah, now y'all see why that's probably one of my favorite songs. So, yeah, my bad. Let's keep going, man, because I can listen to that song going over and over. Okay, now, calling Miss Khadija. All I need to do is just play the head. Because every bass player in the world who's ever transcribed this bass line feel a certain way. I actually played this song recently with the Mosaic group that Paul Gavin leads down here, which is our Gulf Coast Jazz Collective down here in Fort Myers. And we did a Blakey show. And I remember everybody in the audience. It was a lot of people in the audience who had never heard this song, which I was very surprised about. But they had never heard this song. And when me and Paul came in with the bass, boom, 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 I just saw people in the audience go, ooh, I like that. And then you hear Paul, dang, take it, dang, 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 dang. He just, yeah, he went off. So y'all will see what I mean. Check it out. Check out Blakey.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba
I told y'all I was only gonna play the beginning of it. Now, let me reference something to you. If I go back and played that melody again, everybody, to you young folks watching this, this is early hip hop. Straight up. If you don't believe me, I will rewind it back. What? Look, can you imagine if a rapper rapped over that? You know how killing that would sound? This is early hip hop. I tell my students all the time, jazz is hip hop. If you listen to any earlier form of hip hop, where do you think they pulled them phrases from? These guys. Come on, man.
I don't gotta explain.
Come on. Come on. I got you. I got you. But you're welcome. Indestructible. Please go back and listen to that record. All right. And then our last example here. The way my man, Mr. Reggie Workman, start this song off. Fire. Straight fire. This is probably the album of this title. The title of this album is self-explanatory. Free for all. We ain't holding back. We going for it. If you don't like it, tough break. Go somewhere else. You ain't gotta listen. Turn it off. But this right here, oh, that melody itself would be self-explanatory. Check it out. Once again, hip-hop. Hip-hop, people. Come on, young people. Y'all got to understand, man. You hear that. That's literally, I play this for my students all the time, and they get it. They're like, dang, professor, I can actually hear the hip-hop in that. I'm like, this was early hip-hop in its purest form. If you talk to any of the early rappers, Grandmaster Flash, Cool Herc, man, these guys was listening to this music. This is where they was pulling these rhythms from. That's why I love Art Blakey in the Jazz Messages so much, because I can literally hear current 22, and I'm talking about the real hip-hop artists here. Now, come on now, we gotta keep it 100. The real hip-hop artists, you can hear the way they phrase and they spit, you could tell they've been checking out some of this stuff. Because that's where they pulling this stuff from. So this album right here, if you go and listen to this album, you will hear all that across the board. And even when Reggie Workman came, that's like me hearing J. Cole. Where do you think they pulling this from? Come on, y'all. hands down. So these are some of my favorite records here. I want to play a really quick clip of his interview when he received the NEA Jazz Masters, and just listen to how he interprets and how he views music and his close relationship to it. I just want to play this real quick clip for you all.
There's a vibration that goes into your body. It affects you as a human being. You have to consider it like part of you. I decided when I was in junior high school that music was a very important thing for me. My family had a house north of Germantown in Philadelphia, and I used to have a room on the third floor where I would stay up all night practicing. Freddie Cole, Nat Cole's younger brother, came to Philadelphia and asked me to join his band. I traveled with Freddie Cole's quartet for a while, and then coming back into town, I could not be satisfied with staying in Philadelphia. I moved to New York and began to work with different people. So many musicians, I couldn't name them all. John Coltrane was working at the Village Gate, and I was working around the corner. John came in, didn't say anything, sat down, listened, and I was in awe. He left, went back to do his set at the Village Gate. A couple days later, he called me up and said, "Hey, Workman, do you want to join my band?" My thoughts were, "Hey, is the Pope Catholic?" I'll never forget the time I asked him, "John, well, how do you want me to interpret this part of your tune?" And he stopped me and said, "Listen, man, I'm having a hard enough time playing this saxophone. Don't ask me how you're supposed to play the bass. You figure it out." Now, Art Blakey was a different kind of person. He was more like a very specific leader, very definite about the way he wanted the group to be. So that was a new lesson for me, to be able to fit your music into where he was. As a supporting artist, one has to really bring their own sound. In jazz world, you are expected to be able to understand what the composition before you is about. Then you must be able to give what is necessary to expand it and make it bigger and better. That's a craft that we all have to develop as spontaneous composers.
And I want to stop right there. You can see, you know, him working with two giants like John Coltrane and Art Blakey really gave him a good sense of like how this music should not only be approached, but just having a humanity side approach to it as well. It can't just be musically. You have to have a humanistic approach to it, which is why I really respect the way he played bass, because you can feel his emotions, happy, sad, joyous, you know, laughter, all of that. You can feel those true human emotions in his playing. And so this is what made me, you know, come to terms of why I wanted to do this Love About series about Reggie Workman and give him his flowers. So my final thoughts are for today are, you know, Reggie Workman has inspired an entire generation of highly motivated, forward-thinking bass players. Definitely one of the pioneers of the 60s and beyond. He was definitely one of the few bassists to perform still to this day, and also had a major contribution to the avant-garde era. And of course, as I always end all of my series, he definitely had originality. And so folks, today, this is my take on Mr. Reggie Workman. I hope you enjoyed. And this is what I love about series on Mr. Reggie Workman. Thank you.
Professor. Man, what an awesome session today. On what I love about Reggie Workman. I'm sitting here and I've added songs to my playlist here, and I love how you referenced it to hip hop and the music of today, and just you really expounded upon all the major artists and albums that he played a major part on, you know. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear his name as often, but man, what a significant contribution to music he's made. So I mean, I'm blown away. And that's the good thing about these sessions, guys, that you're going to hear some names that may not be a household name, but you've heard their music before and you don't even know it. Mm-hmm. So it's okay sometimes to be that person in the background and you're still making a significant contribution to this music that we love called jazz. So yep. I want to just say, hey guys, if you're really enjoying what you're hearing, and we want to thank you, Professor Robertson, for everything that you did for our research on this and just putting this together. But we want to also remind you that, you know, you can see sessions like this and more in our archives at clearwaterjazz.com's education and outreach section on the website. And if there's a particular artist that you want to hear more about, or a topic you want to suggest, or you want to just tell how awesome Professor Robertson is, you can email us at info@clearwaterjazz.com. We love hearing from our listeners. So we want to thank our sponsors once again. We want to thank you, Professor Robertson. We hope to see you out there on the big stages throughout Tampa Bay and throughout the country. I've been your guest host, Michael Kernodle. And until next time, everybody, keep it swinging.
Keep it swinging. That's right.
Thank you for listening to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Thank you to our friends at Marine Max Clearwater for helping to present this podcast series. To learn more about the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Annual Festival tradition, other special events throughout the year, and our year-round education and outreach, please visit clearwaterjazz.com.